What amounted to his final pre-flight inspection of the tires, the lights, the brakes, the air hoses, the mirrors, the gas and oil and water levels. The cavernous trailer had been loaded with huge spools of cotton twine, headed for the tire plants in Cumberland, Maryland, due for delivery at first light Tuesday morning. The interior of the cab was cluttered with the things we would need. Ditty bags for our clothes, pillows and blankets, road maps, a tool kit, flares, a flashlight, dirty rags, oil cans, kitchen matches and spare cigars, Mama's roast beef sandwiches wrapped in wax paper, a thermos of coffee. Dangling from the dashboard was a radio, whose importance I would discover in due time. As I settled deeper into the shotgun perch that would be my home for the next 5 days and nights, I discovered something that might become problematic for a boy my age during the 1,500 miles of jostling that lay ahead. Taped to the ceiling of the cab, smiling back at me and wearing just about nothing, there was Rita Hayworth in her famous cheesecake photograph. Mama leaned in for a last goodbye. "Now, Paul," she said, "I don't want him to come back wanting to be a truck driver." "It's good enough for me," he said, "and I notice there ain't nobody starving." Ignition. Contact. Vroom, vroom, vroom. With a roar of the engine and a farewell burp on the air horns, we eased away from the house. And then we were gone. Father and son, off on the great adventure. Those were simpler times in America. The roadways were narrow, two-lane asphalt, long before anyone had designed a high-speed interstate system. The trucks were rudimentary, a step up from farm machinery. No power steering, no power brakes, no air conditioning, no sleeper cabs with king-size beds and stand-up showers, no citizens' band radios. And under these conditions, Daddy had to run a gauntlet fraught with logging trucks, drunks in pickups, cops hiding behind billboards, and women driving half a mile to the grocery store in the family sedan. He was not a company driver on salary, but rather a leased operator, a freelance driver counting on net profit, which meant taking catnaps in the cab rather than checking into motels, nibbling on snacks from home rather than loading up on meals at truck stops, placing collect calls to the house to speak to himself as a means of letting Mama know of his progress. "Just tell Hemp I'll try again from Bluefield about noon tomorrow." The tire companies didn't care how he did it, just deliver the stuff on time. Anything beyond Chattanooga was new to me. A wide-eyed kid seeing the world through the bug-spattered windshield of his father's truck. And by 10 o'clock, we were rolling into the hills of East Tennessee toward Knoxville and Bristol. This was lonesome business, I could see. And without the radio, it would have been downright tedious. It was a Motorola, jury-rigged to the dashboard by wires, and through it, I was being hurled into a magical realm I had never heard before. Sure, we often picked up WSM out of Nashville to hear the Grand Ole Opry wavering in and out on Saturday nights at home, but what we were hearing now was exotic stuff. Here came XERF, an outlaw station in Ciudad Acuña, Mexico, booming up from the Rio Grande with 500,000 watts. Enough power to blow away any local station between Texas and the North Pole, with a mixture of country music and earnest pitches for magic prayer cloths and oil-on-velvet paintings of the Last Supper and 1,000 baby chicks, folks, sex not guaranteed, for as long as he makes this offer possible. Everything short of autographed photographs of Jesus himself. Here came WHO from Des Moines, and WWVA out of Wheeling, and a half dozen others, all fighting for space on the airwaves as we rocked along the mountainous roads, the wind in our